99.7 FM and online at oldhamcommunityradio.com are featuring all that's best from the King of Instruments. This is Community Keyboards with Ian Wolstenholme.
Hello again, and welcome to this edition of Community Keyboards on air and online. As ever, over the next hour, I'll have music from the King of Instruments in all its guises, from pipes and electronics to keyboards and beyond. A few weeks ago, I went over to the St. Mary Low House Catholic Church in St. Helens to listen to some of the first sounds of the near-complete installation there of the ex-Pyramid Cinema Sale and Oldham Bluecoat School Christie organ. Now, if you ever heard the organ in the school, you'll doubtless recall its unique dual-console style, with the Egyptian console used on the stage for the popular monthly Lancastrian Theatre Organ Trust concerts there, and the second console in a more traditional style, sitting usually under wraps at the back of the hall. Well, once the organ was removed from the school, work started in 2014, and I'll be chatting to Anthony Brooks and James Crompton about the progress at St Mary's. Indeed, it's Anthony in his role as resident carillioner at the church who starts our music in a slightly different way as he performs Painting the Clouds with Sunshine and What a Wonderful World on the historic Grand Carillon. And that's followed by an impromptu performance on the Christie organ, as it sounds at the moment, by our good friend Michael Holmes and some Judy Garland favourites. And Anthony, you're resident carillioner. I've only ever spoken with one other such person. I think that was Hans-Juve Hilscher some years ago now. You did your little stint earlier on this afternoon, which we've had a little sneak preview of.
Yeah.
But then you jump on the Christie. What's it like going from one of those completely different bell instruments to a theatre organ?
Completely different altogether. It's like, I suppose, comparing playing a guitar to a violin. They might both have, you know, strings and a similar way of working, but they're nothing like, really, technique-wise or sound-wise. So, yeah, different kettle of fish altogether.
Thank you.
Michael Holmes at the Christie Organ, and we'll be back at Low House after this break.
Featuring all its best from the King of Instruments on Community Keyboards with Ian Wolstenholm.
And welcome back. Let's join Anthony and James at St Mary's Low House in St Helens, where James is at the console and an example of how the organ is used in Sunday services with I, the Lord of Sea and Sky. What does the church here at St Mary's Law House think of a theatre, ostensibly, I know it's a dual purpose instrument, but ostensibly a theatre organ in the church hall? Has it kind of been met with resistance, or is it something that's just now open-minded a little bit more?
It's generally played in a more refined, sensible manner on a Sunday, so there are a lot of the patrons or congregation, depending on what event we're having, are unaware that it's a cinema organ. And also, a lot of people nowadays don't know what a cinema organ is or was. So providing it does what it's meant to do on a Sunday, I don't think there's any resistance to it letting it tear down when it wants to and being capable of being more entertaining and more orchestral, we might say.
And you've got the piano from the Peel Green, haven't you, yeah. James? Now, is that all up and running, or is it still to be?
Yeah, we've had it connected. It was connected within 2 hours of it.
Oh, really?
Being brought here when we picked it up from the Heritage Centre. It's nice to have it here because when I first saw that piano, it actually lived behind the console at the Blue Coat School, so it's nice that it's been brought here. It connected up very easily, but we've had to disconnect it for the time being because it took the place of the chrysalis, but it will be up and running for the opening concert.
James Crompton at the Christie there, and in one of our November editions of the programme, we'll feature some highlights from the official grand opening gala concert with Nigel Ogden. Well, let's turn our attention to keyboards now, and another welcome contribution from our good friend Alan Murray and his Yamaha PSR 9000 Pro. Alan has recorded the theme from Desert Island Discs, especially for the programme.
Thank you.
sailing by on Yamaha Pro 9000, courtesy of Alan Murray. A few weeks ago, I went over to the Cedar Court Hotel in Harrogate to join the guests at the Top Note event and sat down to have a word with organisers Tony Stace and Andrew Nix. Really? It's always perceived that these events are, as well as musically entertaining, but there's a little bit of humour injected. Is that still the case in 2021?
Definitely, yes. I want to stick with the Tony and Andrew thing for a minute, Ian, because age before beauty, you know, so it should be Andrew, Nix and Tony Stace, but it is Tony, Stace and Andrew for some reason. But yes, humour is still very much evident in our shows in 2021, isn't it?
Oh, we could maybe just stick to Beauty and the Beast then. Is that right?
Don't they? Yeah. Listen, guys, it must be greatly satisfying for you to eventually get back into these events after what must have seemed like a lifetime away from the crowds. Would that be a fair representation?
Yeah, it's been difficult. It's really, really good to play with a live audience, and the atmosphere and the support has been outstanding, really good.
Because we were talking to Chris earlier on the programme, and the fact that, you know, you've been dabbling and playing at home, and everybody's been doing online videos and Facebook this and yada, yada, yada. But you don't know who's listening. Well, you've got the comments, I guess, but you don't know in terms of a physical, auditory experience of people either cheering, clapping, or sometimes booing, maybe. You don't get that feedback. Do you miss that as a pro player, Tony?
I miss it very much, yeah. Being out on the road is for me what it's all about. And as much as it's nice to try and attempt, I haven't even really attempted to play even like online with YouTube, and it wasn't for me. I didn't really want to go down that path. Some of my colleagues that were doing that was fantastic, but it wasn't for me. I wanted to get back on stage and do it on stage in front of people.
In real life, real time kind of thing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the people who actually support these events. Have you found that they've been a little bit reluctant to sort of start to come out of their homes to support, or have they been just sort of chomping at the bit and saying, can't wait?
I think initially there was the apprehension, I think, but as time goes on, everyone's feeling a little bit more comfortable. And then they were coming through the hotel doors just saying it's fantastic to be back. So we've got good feedback. So I think everyone's happy, to be honest.
And you're back on the road too, now, with the old Roland. Is that,
That's right, yeah, the Roland Italia. I've dusted it off and it's looking pristine. It's in really good condition. Not. It's done a few miles, like me.
Are you optimistic or less so about the future of this industry now we're emerging out of this terrible past 18 months?
I'd say I was just very hopeful, more than anything. You know, it's a worry. Who knows what the future is going to bring? But I'm just very hopeful that we can continue in some form with our music and festivals and concerts. And I started my first show back in July, and second one back in August, and the first festival back here at Harrogate since March 2020. So, let's just say I'm very hopeful for the future.
Half glass full, as they say, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And you're the same, I guess.
Yes, yeah. I think it's nice to see the clubs are actually getting active and getting organists booked. But on the other hand, there are some clubs that the committee basically don't want to carry on, which is a shame. And they just take the decision to close. And I think there's people out there that would run these clubs, and I think they should be given a chance to do that, really. Well, certainly within the world of the players, they're the enthusiasts, I think, really. And I think there's some of them that would take on these clubs. But given that opportunity to actually take over the reins, the financial agreements and things like that, I think they've been withheld, and I find that a bit sad, really, because it's been a good business for, you know, I like the entertainment business. Live music should remain live.
Somebody said to me that the future of the keyboard world is largely going to be these sort of events where people come for a certain period of time rather than having to come out in sort of dark nights and as we approach winter and all the rest of it, to come along to events like this, to sit down, to be wined and dined, to hear a selection of players under one roof. Do you think that that's a viable thought? Do you think that, for example, Tony, that long term many a society is going to perhaps jump onto this idea of let's all get together and have an under one roof type of thing rather than individual little nuclei businesses all over the UK? Or is there still mileage left in the old dog yet?
I think that the organ clubs wouldn't be setting up any kind of, you know, weekend events. I think it would be down to, as Andrew said, the people that are the enthusiasts, which seems to be, like as Andrew said, the our colleagues, you know, friends, that would set up weekends like the one we set up round and about the country. Maybe that is the way, and maybe the concerts as we've known them over the years, maybe they are going to fall by the way because of the lack of support and the worry that we have in the world now as well. So it's, as I said a moment ago, it's just I'm hopeful for the future, but I think it's going to play a bigger part, the festivals, the get-togethers, but by the people that are running them, like myself and Andrew, maybe in different parts. Maybe we could do some weekend or a couple of day shows in a certain area to try and bring back the people where there isn't any clubs anymore. You know, that sort of an idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, while I've got you two guys here, what makes an event like this tick?
Well, a good crowd. Definitely a good crowd and enthusiasm. Music lovers. And then if they appreciate the hard work that us organisers put into the event, I think we just run along lovely.
Little Dizzy Fingers and Music, Music, Music from Tony Stace and Andrew Nix. Yes, I think that was the right order. And incidentally, the Chris referred to in that chat is Chris Stanbury, who was my special guest on the last edition of the programme. If you missed it, it's available on Catch Up right now. Well, do stay with me after this break.
You're listening to Community Keyboards on Oldham Community Radio 99.7 FM with Ian Wolstenholme.
A rather discordant start to this final part of Community Keyboards, where there you heard what is letter M in our archive of old electronic organs and keyboards. The Maestrovox was a monophonic portable vacuum tube organ built by Maestrovox Electronic Organs in Middlesex. The instrument was one of the many designs similar to the clavioline, the Tutivox and Univox, and it was intended as a piano attachment instrument for dance bands and light orchestras of the day. The Maestro Vox was produced from 1952 onwards and came in a number of models, the Consort retailing at 63 guineas, the Consort Deluxe, Coronation, and a later version that mechanically triggered notes from a piano keyboard, the Orchestrain. Frieda Hall, Stanley Black and Carol Gibbons were amongst many celebrities to demonstrate and feature the instrument, and it's widely believed to have been used in this recording of Little Red Monkey, performed by the cast of the BBC radio series Take It From Here.
Look at the monkey, funny monkey, little red monkey, acting so fidgety. Look at the monkey, funny monkey, little red monkey, cute as can be.
Where is his mama, papa, sister, brother, cousin, rest of the family? Little red monkey on his own, some very lonesome monkey is he.
Well, for copyright reasons, we can only include a few seconds of the Maestro Vox, and there are very few other recordings in existence, in fact. Truly, then, an archive historical instrument. Now, the winner of the July challenge on the Keyboard Music Forum's online group is Hugh Wallington, whose entry to fit in with the theme Mountains, Hills or Fields proved popular with the voters. Well, here's Hugh with his arrangement of the Fats Waller favourite Blueberry Hill, played on his Yamaha AR80 organ. Hugh Wallington and Blueberry Hill. Okay, it's time once again for Ask Andy, when our good friend Andy Carville comes to the aid of another listener who has a musical concern or question. While we get Andy on the line, here he is to play the delightful Deborah's theme from the film Once Upon a Time in America. From the pen of the late Ennio Morricone, Deborah's theme from the film Once Upon a Time in America. Well, technology is holding up for us, and a pleasure, as always, to welcome Andy on the telephone line. Hello, sir. Are you keeping well?
I'm very well indeed, thank you, and a pleasure to be back again.
Right. Tell us what's the dilemma this time, Andy.
Well, Ian, today we have a question from a Mr. Clay of Potter's Bar. And his question actually revolves around Hammond organs. And his question says here, why has the Hammond sound become so revered? He says, I like the sound of Hammond organs when I hear them played, but I don't see why they seem to be held in such high regard. Well, it's an interesting question, actually, and of course, Hammond organs are one of, if not the most famous name in the world of organs, or electronic organs for sure. Why the name has become so famous? First, we're going to do a little brief history lesson. And the Hammond Organ Company actually dates all the way back to 1935, when it was actually founded by, yes, indeed, there was a Mr. Hammond. His name was Lawrence Hammond, and he had a partner called John Hannert. But Mr. Hammond, interestingly enough, wasn't a musician at all. Mr. Hammond was a clockmaker. And I don't know how and why this came about. And indeed, don't ask me any technical questions because I can't answer those either. But for some reason, Mr. Hammond discovered that the sort of wheels that he was using in building clocks could and was capable of creating a sound. And he invented a system which is called tone wheels. This is very important in the Hammond story, called tone wheels, where if these tone wheels were made to spin, and placed near an electromagnetic source, they could actually create a very pure sine wave flute organ type of sound. So this goes all the way back, as I say, to 1935. And this term tone wheel is very, very important in the history of Hammond organs. And production began in 1935. And all of the instruments that were produced in those days and for many years afterwards used this unique system of tone wheel generation of sound. And that's actually what gives a Hammond a very, very distinctive sound. They also had some other unique features, and that was the invention of drawbars. Drawbars are a huge topic all on their own, but I'll just touch on them very briefly. Drawbars are a way of manipulating sounds across different pitches. So drawbars tend to be a full set of 9 drawbars, which is what Hammond invented, goes from 16 foot through to 1 foot. And you can pull in and pull out sliders, which are simply volume controls. So you can set the 16 foot, which is a lower pitch, to full volume, and then you can set an 8 foot pitch, which is actually constant standard pitch, at half volume, and then you can have a 2 foot drawbar at just a quarter of that volume, and you can create hundreds of different, well, in fact, technically it's millions of different flute organ sounds by manipulating a set of drawbars. So they were two key components of the early days of Hammond organs: tone wheels and drawbars. And I think if we look back in the history, of course, at the time in 1935, there wasn't a home organ market at all. It didn't exist. And of course, Hammond was invented in America. It was an American company, and it was used primarily in churches. So that was the market for Hammond organs. Pipe organs, real pipe organs, are magnificent instruments, but of course cost a fortune to maintain, and many instruments fall into disrepair and can't be used, and the Hammond organ fitted into the replacement of a pipe organ. And very quickly they were selling lots of instruments into that world in America, and indeed even today Hammond organs are still extensively used, particularly in gospel churches, which is very, very popular in America. There's lots of different gospel churches, and lots of them use Hammond organs still, even today. But it's interesting to watch. If you look on YouTube and put in gospel organ in America, you'll find some fantastic players, and they're all playing old tone wheel Hammonds for that unique sound that they gave. More of that in just a moment. Actually, by the 1960s, it's estimated that something like 50,000 churches across America had got a Hammond organ installed inside, which is unbelievable, really. It's incredible. But of course, something happens which unfortunately befalls us all, and that is cost. And tone wheel production became very expensive. Actually, something I should just mention before I get to this stage is lots of Hammond organs didn't have built-in speakers. And Hammond used to produce their own speakers, separate speakers. So they were very large boxes. Probably the most famous Hammond speaker was called a PR40, which was very nice. It was sort of Hammond in sort of fully compatible with your Hammond instruments. But there was another major development, which was a gentleman called Don Leslie invented Leslie speakers, which were at the time, a first of rotating speakers. Speakers that literally spun round, either at a very slow speed or a very fast speed. And when you added a tone wheel Hammond to a Leslie speaker, that was the definitive Hammond organ sound. And that's what became very famous. And through the 60s, lots of pop bands started using them. One of the most famous recordings featuring a Hammond organ was, of course, A Whiter Shade of Pale by Procol Harum. But many, many pop groups were using Hammond organs, tone wheel instruments, through a Leslie speaker, and they became quite famous, very famous. In fact, built sort of an image of being the Rolls Royce of organs. There is another interesting element here for the home player. These days, we think of instruments as being orchestral instruments. You can make string sounds, piano sounds, vibraphone sounds, trumpet sounds, big band sounds, all sorts of things out of today's instruments. But actually, a tone wheel Hammond only made a tone wheel Hammond organ sound. That's all it did. You had lots of variations, lots of very nice flute sounds and organ sounds, but you didn't have a piano voice, you didn't have a trumpet voice or a string voice or anything else. They were just those organ type sounds. In America, as I mentioned, lots of church using them, but over in Europe here, we developed some very well-known players who were using this sound, probably the most famous of which was Klaus Wunderlich, the German virtuoso, who used Hammond on a lot of his earlier recordings. He became very famous as a Hammond player. And people like George Blackmore and Keith Beckingham, Daryl Bryan, Rod Well, etc., all were very, very good playing a tone wheel Hammond. Fantastic. As I mentioned, though, as time passed, the production of tone wheel instruments became very expensive. And unfortunately, the last tone wheel models, which was the T series, ended production back in 1975. And at that time, Hammond switched over from using tone wheels to using just standard integrated circuits, like all the other manufacturers at the time. I mean, there was lots of different manufacturers in the 70s and 80s, and they were just making all very nice organ sounds using integrated circuits. And Hammond, in a way, at that point, lost its edge, and the tone wheel sound disappeared, and the integrated circuit came into being. And unfortunately, from Hammond's perspective, these weren't as popular as the tone wheel instruments. And this led, sadly, to the demise of the company. The original Hammond company, which actually finished, closed down in 1985. That was when the original Hammond company ended. And then the name was actually purchased by Hammond Organ Company of Australia. They only held it for 3 years, didn't really do much to it, was in a little bit of no man's land. And then it was taken over by Hammond Suzuki, who are still the owners of the Hammond name now. And Hammond Suzuki have actually evolved quite interestingly. They came through perhaps the harder times at the beginning of that, when they were making integrated circuit instruments, perhaps to more recent times, more modern times, when Hammond Suzuki very cleverly started using sampling technology to recreate the tone wheel sound that the original instruments had. And I think that is now, if you like, the renaissance of Hammond instruments has come about because of that. because they now sound more like the original Tone Wheels, because they're using sampling technology of those original instruments. So Hammond instruments now have evolved. They sound more like the Tone Wheels of old. Frankly, they never sound exactly the same as the Tone Wheels of old. They also have become more orchestral. So the latest instruments do have a piano button and string sounds and brass and woodwind sounds, etc., etc., etc. So Hammond have had quite a sort of period of turmoil, I suppose, in those sort of 80s and 90s and perhaps the early 2000s. But I have every respect for Hammond Suzuki have now, if you like, rebirthed the brand to be more like its original self, and all strength to them. But must say, the thing about the Hammond instruments, or any instrument, doesn't matter whether you're talking about Yamaha instruments or Korg instruments or anything, it depends what sound you like. Mm-hmm. And if you, Mr. Clay, like the sound of a Hammond organ, there is no reason why you shouldn't have one. If you don't like the sound of a Hammond organ, have something else. It just depends what you like. But really, when people talk about the original Hammond sound, they're talking about instruments of many years ago, before 1975, when they were produced using tone wheel sound generation. And of course, Hammond became very famous in certain circles, like jazz organ circles. Jimmy Smith made the instrument very well known again in the jazz organ sort of genre, that area. So yeah, it's a unique brand of instruments which actually went through a period of the Rolls Royce of organs was a Hammond at that particular time. But listen to the different instruments. If you like the sound of this instrument as opposed to that instrument, go for the instrument that you like the sound of. That's really your choice. So I hope that's interesting. A little bit of background to the Hammond organ company. And I love Hammond organs, but I love tone wheel Hammonds. That's my that's my real love.
And I'm sure, as you say, you, Mr. Clay, and I consider Hammonds to be, as Mr. Clay said in the outset, a wonderful, distinctive sound. And it's still, you know, whenever the ordinary man or woman in the street hears the word organ, they think of either the church pipes, the theatre organ, or the working men's club, dare I say, the Hammond organ sound. It's a huge legacy. And still, and as you say, remains popular.
Interesting you say that, Ian, because, of course, the Working Men's Club was another very, very sort of famous use of Hammond organs. And many Hammond organs were sold into Working Men's Clubs simply because they were Hammonds.
Yes.
People just went along to buy an organ, and all the other clubs had Hammonds, so we'll have a Hammond. And it was a very, very interesting time. Very interesting time.
Andy, thank you for relaying and reminding everybody of the wonderful story of Hammond. It's unique and certainly well worth listening to from time to time. And I know Mr. Clay will have found that absolutely fascinating, as will all our listeners, of course. Andy, thank you for doing the research, and we look forward to chatting with you very soon again.
Ian, it's a great pleasure to be with you. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
It's impossible to include every Hammond track that I'd like to, but mentioning the Working Men's Club dimension with Andy Carville a few moments ago, that was Ursula Krieber, who with her husband was mine hosts at the Heroes of Waterloo Public House, right here in Ashton-under-Lyne, and later 30 years of entertaining on the Hammond organ at the British Legion Club in Pendlebury in Manchester. The track, of course, was The Carioca, which ends the show this time. Don't forget, you can listen again to anything you might have missed by going to the oldhamcommunityradio.com player or catch up via anchor.fm/communitykeyboards, also on most of the podcast platforms. An email to communitykeyboards@gmail.com or indeed a note to PO Box 997 Oldham OL 19EB will also find us. And to keep up to date with news and information in between shows, head over to the Community Keyboards Facebook page. For the moment, this is Ian Wolstenholme saying thanks very much for listening. Take care, all the best, and bye-bye.